The hyperbole is done. Now we can finally play the game.
Look at that. Oh, my goodness. One man. Goodbye. Hello, Haskins. Intercepted by Teague. George Teague to the end zone. Touchdown. We're going to play football. Yippee. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Ball goes into the end zone, and it is incomplete. Hold the phone, everybody. There's a penalty flag thrown, and I think it's against Miami. The royalty of college football is in assembly at the Rose Bowl 2006.
Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 14 show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert and a tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, fellas. Welcome back, Goon. Glad to have you.
I'm alive. My phone is 100%. I'm all jacked up. It's been a long 2 weeks since we've talked, but it's been a fun 2 weeks, though. A lot of stuff going down.
Absolutely. Jerry, welcome aboard.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Let's talk some college football, my friend. Lots of exciting things going on.
Yes, sir. Well, www.south-beach-shopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Well, fellas, we survived rivalry weekend with some great games that lasted 3 days this past weekend. Great to have a holiday weekend. You got to watch them Thursday night, Friday, Saturday. And we'll talk about some of those games as well as the conference championship matchups coming up this weekend, which ought to be awful fun. And there's also a game starting on Friday night there as well. We'll make our predictions on each one of those. So our competition's coming down to the wire before the bowl season starts, guys. And Keith, you got room to make up once we start into the bowling. So
yeah,
we'll see how
Terry's
that goes.
Terry's gonna get hit by a bus for me to take him over. So
well, you know what? We can start adding points into the mix, like we're going to do for the bowl games. Anything
yeah,
can
baby.
Happen. That's your way
I'm
back.
About.
That's true.
Hey, first, I'd like to get your opinion on the Ohio State and Baylor situations. You know, and, you know, right away when JT Barrett went down, the announcer started saying, well, this is going to affect the Buckeyes if they were, you know, assuming they're able to beat Wisconsin, which may be a big assumption. But, you know, that it's going to affect their chances of going to the Final Four because of the team they presently have. And I guess I have a question for you to get your guys' opinion on that. Is that really fair, or should they be going by the body of work that got them to that point? And along with that, you know, Baylor's quarterback, Bryce Petty, he has a concussion. I guess the word is he is going to play, but it could be the same thing for him if he was not able to play. Is it fair to Baylor to knock them out of the box if this quarterback can't go and they continue to win their game? So What's your thinking on that, both of you guys, Keith?
Well, I mean, we talked about it earlier in the year with Jameis Winston. You know, we were just waiting for his imminent suspension from a game, or possibly for the season because of all his idiocracy he partakes in. So we were waiting for this, and we actually talked about this months ago, and that we said, you know, what is this? Does the body of work for Florida State, if they go undefeated and Winston is suspended? He did have a hearing, and they had the student hearing, so he may be suspended for all we know. Would that affect his body of play and affect the Florida State? And for years past, yes, I think it would. I mean, I don't think it would. Excuse me. The undefeated record should be the undefeated record. I think that that's going to change now. It's a little weird with this whole group of us, 14 or 16 people, and how they make their picks, and I really think they're looking for the best teams and to be the most competitive games. I mean, that's how I feel about it. Is it right? I would absolutely say no way, but it looks like it may happen like that.
Well, I guess my thought on that is, that being the case, Ohio State, when they lost their quarterback before the season ever started, would not have ever been in anybody's top 50. But they turn around and they end up with a Big Ten Player of the Year, a quarterback in JT Barrett that just played lights out. Well, it took them a game to get there as they lost that opening game. But I just don't know, you're not giving the rest of the team an opportunity to compete because you're making the assumption that the quarterback can't play. This next quarterback up can't play. And I just think that's unfair to, in this case, Ohio State, for it could be anybody, but just in Ohio State's case, to just assume that they can't win because they don't have the quarterback. Terry?
Yeah, actually, I agree a lot with Keith in terms of, you know, how you articulated it. It's not really fair, but it's kind of the reality of the situation where when we had the BCS system, it was basically focused on the body of work. It was the numbers, you know, it was the strength of schedule, the computers, all of that was, you know, taking into account how things were kind of playing out on the field, where when we have this committee, they're obviously looking for the best teams, and they've said this. At the beginning of the year, this question was posed to a few of the members, and they said, well, it would impact their decision-making process if there was an injury to a player. The good news for Ohio State is that they do get a shot to play one game with this quarterback, and if Jones plays well enough, if they beat Wisconsin, which is going to be a very difficult task, it would have been difficult even with their starting quarterback in there. So they do have an opportunity to look good, to win the game, to move on. And at that point, I think, you know, if he does play well and Ohio State looks good, then they have a really good shot to be the team based on the fact that their resume is pretty darn good when you look at it outside of that Virginia Tech game. With Baylor as well, it looks like Petty's going to play. I think, you know, it would be difficult to hold him out. He would have to have a pretty severe, you know, case of some kind of post-concussion, you know, situation for him not to play. But, yeah, for them, I mean, it would impact them as well the same way. You know, if he didn't play and they won, then obviously, you know, they would get him back and still have a chance, and they could evaluate that team based on having Bryce Petty in there. But for Ohio State, it all comes down to this game. They're going to have to look good. Jones is going to have to play well enough, and they're going to have to beat a really good Wisconsin team. And if they do that, then I think Ohio State will be the fourth team. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, he doesn't have a lot of experience. He hasn't thrown the ball much, I think 17 or 18 times. So it's going to be interesting for them to kind of ramp him up and get him ready to go this week. But definitely agree with Keith, and I think it'll play out with the committee based on who they feel is the best team at that time with the available roster.
Well, I guess I would hypothetically, and this is strictly hypothetical, but back to the point. Holy heck, TCU jumped Florida State. TCU is now number 3 by the committee. Florida State might not even be number 4. Interesting.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's one I didn't see coming, because I'm still thinking Baylor should be ahead of TCU to begin with. But we have an Alabama 1, Oregon 2, and TCU 3. So you still have Baylor, Florida State, and Ohio State in there. They had Arizona at 7th and Michigan State 8, Kansas State at 9, and Mississippi State at 10. So we'll see how these last three plug in.
Well, I think it's getting proven with Florida State. I mean, their body of work says they're 12-0, but they are not playing well at all. And I think that this is answering our question is, what's going to happen? I mean, they are undefeated, but they are not playing well at all.
Yep. Well, there you go. They're number 4. And quite honestly, Florida State, Alabama, I might like to watch that game if it ended up that way.
And one thing to take into consideration, guys, when you're looking at this playoff is they have to also kind of take into account where these games are going to be played, these initial games. So they would probably err on the side of shuffling things around, and this could be a precursor to them making that decision on Saturday or Sunday. I think it's Sunday when they actually do the final rankings. But there's a good chance that they would love to pair Alabama and Florida State up in the Sugar Bowl, obviously being that it's in the South. And then obviously with the more Western schools, they would like to pair them up there in the Rose Bowl. So not that it really shouldn't matter, but they do. They said they were going to actually look at this and take that into account as well, kind of an underlining factor in terms of how they kind of strategically put those teams in those top four. With Florida State, it gives them an excuse to do that because they haven't looked good, as you guys said.
Man. Interesting that Ohio State jumps to 5 and Baylor falls to 6. That's kind of interesting, too. Ohio State, I wouldn't say they played a great game against Michigan, and we'll talk about that some, but they're up to 5.
Yeah, that's it. It is interesting, some of the shuffling and the movement.
Well, I was going to say to you guys, hypothetically, let's just say Ohio State and Wisconsin play in this game, and Ohio State's defense plays lights out. And their offense struggles under the new quarterback, but they beat a really good Wisconsin team, let's just say, for conversation, 13-10. Low-scoring game. Okay, so you didn't put up 40 and 50 like everybody wants you to, but you held a really good team to 10. Do you penalize that team because the quarterback didn't put up points?
It looks like that's how they're going to handle it. I mean, that's just crazy to me. But again, it's just it really throws a lot like a big wrench and a big monkey wrench in there. Just like, man, Ohio State. You know, we were saying all year, will they get anything on the field? They're on their third team quarterback right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's just crazy. And then, I mean, what would Alabama do to Florida State is what I'm going to say to you guys right now. I mean, like, Florida State has just been playing with fire all year, and Alabama was just throwing them in a volcano, in my opinion. That's just, my goodness. I mean, I don't think they want Florida State there, to be honest with you.
Hey, Keith, you know what the guy on that worldwide network says? Not so fast, my friend.
Yeah.
We got another game to play before these Final Four end up being the Final Four, and we're going to pick them here shortly.
This is true.
There might be an upset.
They're not going to have Florida State in this Final Four. I already know that. I know where Bill's going with that one.
hey, Keith. I don't know what more to say about the Penn State season and the Michigan State 34-10 win, except the defense held the rope for about as long as they could the entire season, and the rope just got too much against them, against the Spartans, and they just couldn't hold on anymore. And the offense, again, just abysmal.
Yeah. Everything about it was just, I mean, there is – you know, the bowl game is the biggest thing about this season, and how that game was this past week. It was painful to watch because, you know, I want to see my guys do well. I mean, everybody wants to see their guys do well, but it's just like they just don't have the horses right now, you know? And you have guys out there who are doing just selling out, like, unbelievably. You know, you got Zettel, you got Barnes, you got Hall out there. I mean, guys are just working their tails off, playing like dogs. And, you know, it's just like they just could not get that offense click at all season. Or the last 8 games were just abysmal to me offensively. And just, you know, again, we can always say it starts up front, but, you know, it goes to the tight ends, it goes down to the downfield blocking. You know, the running backs hit the holes right. Hackenberg looks completely scared to me at times. Like he's been hit so much. He looks like Ron Jaworski in like 1984. He's, you know, got hit so many times that he just, you know, he would just drop back and expect someone to be there. And he just can't get comfortable. He did not look comfortable. I might even say that Rutgers game when he led that last minute drive was the last time I actually saw him really comfortable back there.
Mm-hmm.
I truly feel that. And it's not his fault. I mean, and everybody says coach's fault, the offensive coordinator. I mean, it's all around. It's everywhere. It's your whole offense. Your offensive line guys not blocking. Tight ends aren't blocking. And it's like catching receivers. I mean, you lose an Allen Robinson, you can lose a lot like that. You never really replace him. Pat, that was his go-to last year. And no one really stepped up to be that kind of player this year. I mean, granted, Allen's a special player, and we'll prove that for years in the NFL, but Pack needed that this year a little bit. They didn't have that. He couldn't lean on that, and it showed. And, you know, with the offensive line with all the pressure and stuff like that, it was an uphill battle all season. And, hey, Bottom line, light at the end of the tunnel. There's 15 more practices before a bowl game. That's if you had told me before the season that, hey, Penn State's going to go to a bowl game, I'd have been happy as hell. And I am happy as hell. I am proud of these guys. I'm proud of this staff. And, happiest for the guys, the seniors, and because I said it for the whole year, and that is, these are the kids who should have left. You know, the Hodges, the Maltys, the Zordiches, they couldn't have left. These are the kids who were freshmen, sophomores, who should have left Penn State under the free agency and didn't, and we owe them a lot of credit for sticking out with us, and, you know, they're going to be paid off pretty handsomely with a bowl game. Hopefully it's a bowl win, but there's 15 more practices for our guys to get better.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I don't usually get to – actually, I don't even like listening to most broadcasts on games, especially when they're ESPN 2 games and are kind of lower-rated games. The announcers aren't so good necessarily. But I thought these announcers the other day did a fantastic job of saying just exactly what you just said, Keith. They all the way to the point of making the comment that if, you know, in the Penn State Hall of Fame, they should put a statue or a plaque at least recognizing this group of seniors and last year's group of seniors for just what they did and sticking around and going through the rough times, just like you said, with knowing they weren't going to a bowl game. You know, they didn't know that until this year, and
yep.
they still stuck it
yep.
out and did the right things for Penn State, and that they should be rewarded accordingly. And I thought the announcers actually did a great job talking about that this week.
They really did.
Terry, what was your take on the Nittany Lions?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the year, we kind of all had our thoughts about, you know, where they might fall, and I think I had them pegged to finish about 7-5 or 8-4, depending on a few of those games, some of those 50-50 games, if you will. But I think we all kind of got a little bit excited after they started off 4-0, and, you know, they looked pretty good, and, you know, the defense obviously continued to play well throughout the year, but as you guys both articulated, the offense continued to struggle and got worse and worse pretty much, and Hack really had a difficult time towards the end of the season. But I think, you know, the reality kind of set in terms of, you know, where they were at with personnel, as Keith mentioned then. You know, this was never going to be the year, so I kind of look at it that way that, you know, some of these games, you know, playing really tough against Ohio State, playing tough against Michigan State for the most part, you know, there were a few things that happened that kind of, you know, put things out of reach there, but the defense was very much in that game. And just you know, playing against some of the better teams, you know, being competitive there for a while with, you know, scholarship reductions with a limited roster. I mean, those are positives in my mind, and you hate to kind of look at things that way when you're a blue blood program like Penn State. But under the circumstances, with everything that was going on, with the coaching changes, with the scholarship limitations, with everything that was surrounding the program, as you guys mentioned, there's a lot of positives that did come out of this season. And, you know, I know nobody's happy with 6-6, and nobody will ever be happy at Penn State with a 6-6 record and, you know, just barely making it to a bowl game. But as Keith pointed out, 15 practices is 15 practices. People are going to get better. And really, you know, look at Franklin and his ability to recruit. You know, they lose a game to Michigan State, and the guy gets 2 4-star recruits to commit to his program. So, I mean, there's going to be better times ahead of Penn State, and this was never going to be – the only point was this was never going to be the year. You know, I think we all got a little bit excited after the first 4 or 5 games, but this wasn't going to be the year. They just didn't have the depth. They didn't have, you know, the experience on the offensive side of the ball, especially at the skill positions. And, you know, they just didn't have enough of those horses to compete with some of the better teams in the Big Ten when it's all said and done. But the future is very bright for Penn State. It really is. And I think Franklin – you know, he struggled a little bit, I think, with some of the in-game decision-making and, you know, clock management and some of the little nuances of that. But, you know, he's a really good football coach, and I think he'll iron that stuff out. And I think schematically on offense, they're going to have to figure out, you know, an identity and really try to figure out, you know, who Penn State football is going to be under Franklin. And I like to see them, you know, continue to try to run the football, play action pass, and do what they've always done there. But they'll sort that out. But, I mean, from a recruiting standpoint, I would imagine Penn State's going to finish strong. They don't have too many scholarships, you know, available at this point, but, you know, I'm sure they'll finish out with some kids that are going to help. And as I said at the beginning of the year, that, you know, going forward with the momentum that he's going to have on the recruiting front, you know, this is the guy that can kind of get things back in order in terms of filling the cupboard back up with quality players. And, you know, with that defense, with all those young players that played on defense and all those young players at the skill position, they come back next year as sophomores and juniors, and you bring up some of those incoming freshmen, and a few of those guys will play a couple of these, you know, very dynamic athletes that he's bringing in. And I think Penn State's going to be in a much better situation next year, and I think they'll be even more competitive. And then, you know, you give them one more year of recruiting and kind of filling up that cupboard, and I think Penn State will be right there in that situation where they're competing with Ohio State and Michigan State for Big Ten championships and even more than that. So this year wasn't perfect, a lot of negative things, but there was also some positive things, and that's kind of how I like to look at it. Again, I think we all got a little bit excited about things after four or five games, but the reality was is that, you know, it was going to be a difficult year, and, you know, there's some positives to take of it, and the biggest one at the end of the day is that they're going to recruit well, and they're going to fill that cupboard up, and Penn State's going to be a team to be reckoned with, you know, come next year and the year after that for sure.
Well, and one final shout-out on Penn State before we move on to the Pac-12 championship. Hats off to Anthony Zettel, first team All-Big Ten, and to Mike Hall, as expected, Butkus Fitzgerald, Big Ten linebacker of the year. So,
great player.
Great player, both great players, and well-deserving of those honors. So, Terry, let's jump out west and talk about the Pac-12 championship game between Oregon and Arizona. Going to be a good one, I think. And I was really impressed with Arizona over the weekend. Oregon's just been good every year, every week with the Heisman Trophy candidate. And both of your picks, Keith and Terry, as the preseason Heisman winners. So you guys, I think, are on target there with Marcus Mariota. Arizona looks good. What do you think, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a really exciting game for some of us Pac-12 fans, you know, people that try to follow, you know, that conference as close as we can. You know, Oregon with Mariota, they're healthy now, and, you know, they're really playing good football. I mean, for them to go in there in the Civil War and beat Oregon State the way they did in that convincing fashion, to me, you know, knowing how difficult it is to play in that stadium, a lot of good teams have struggled there. I can't say enough about, you know, the way they're playing. And right now, you can even make an argument that Oregon's playing the best football of anybody in the country at this point. So I'm excited to see them go out there and have a showcase game on Friday night. I wasn't a big fan of the Pac-12 doing that because, in my mind, it kind of diminishes the conference a little bit by having a championship game on Friday night. But I know in the eyes of the Pac-12 commissioner, he just, you know, he wanted to have a game, you know, a night all to themselves. So, you know, they've decided to do that the last couple years. But
I like it.
But Arizona, I'm sorry?
I like it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, he's done a good job of you know, kind of elevating the Pac-12 to, you know, to heights where, you know, it really hasn't been as a conference. I mean, the depth in this conference right now is, in my mind, is this year, and really if you look at the last 2 years, I think this is the best conference in college football from top to bottom. The SEC might have, you know, if you're going 1-8, they might be, you know, the best conference there in terms of just quality teams. But the Pac-12, you could even make an argument for that with them this year. You got Arizona, who with Rich Rod has done a fantastic job, you know, incorporating that system. It took him about a year or so to kind of get the kind of players that he needed in there to run those schemes, both offensively and defensively. But Arizona's playing really good football right now, too. And they beat Oregon the last two times that they've played. So it's going to be an interesting game. We'll see what happens. I think, you know, the key for Arizona is going to obviously be, you know, can they keep that Oregon offense off the field? And that's difficult when you run an up-tempo offense like Arizona does as well. So Oregon's defense is pretty physical. They're pretty athletic. I have a feeling, we're going to talk about this game, I think, at the end, but I have a feeling Oregon's going to play really well, and I think they'll win this game. I just think Mariota's going to be too much. I think the defense for Oregon will play really well. I think they'll slow Arizona down a little bit. And it's a stage that Arizona hasn't been on. You know, they haven't really been in a situation to, you know, compete for a Pac-12 championship in a while. And, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit overwhelming for them. And I really do believe Oregon and Mariota will do what they have to do to kind of move on and play in the playoff. But it should be a really fun game. I think both offenses are tremendous. Both defenses, they have good defensive coaches, and they'll do a good job on that front. But I think Oregon will be they'll be the team that pulls it out on Friday night.
Well, I got a question
all right,
for you, sir. Hold on.
Go ahead, Keith.
What if Arizona takes out Oregon? Do you think they go from 7-4? I love all the different scenarios here.
Yeah,
I just don't think they're going to take Baylor and TCU. I just don't think they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not going to take them both. I don't see them taking both. I'm just thinking that if Baylor takes care of their business here over Kansas State and they've beaten TCU, I just can't see how TCU could be higher than Baylor. It just makes no sense.
That's a really good question, Keith. That's a really good question. What if this happened, guys? And now we're going to talk about some other games, but what if Missouri beats Alabama, Georgia Tech beats Florida State, Kansas State beats Baylor, and Oregon loses to Arizona?
And Wisconsin beats Ohio State. Imagine that four.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy. Well, hey, let's thank our sponsor real quick, Keith, and then we'll come back and we'll talk Big Ten. If you like shopping online, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com, South Beach Shopping, and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the All Stores tab and check out all 3,000-plus network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there and some small ones, too. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop, and best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. And by the way, fellas, I can tell you I am up to $84.63 cash back from my Christmas shopping already and some things I bought for my house. Free money. Free money. Keith, I always measure this free money and how many beers I could buy.
Yep.
And for $84, I'm starting to get up there.
Yeah.
Everything gets measured in beers, you know, whether it be a six-pack or a couple cases. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt about it, man.
All right. Well, hey, Big Ten Championship, big man. Wisconsin, Ohio State. We mentioned Ohio State comes in banged up at quarterback. Wisconsin is on a roll. They've won 7 in a row since they were upset back in early October by Northwestern. A tremendous running back and Heisman Trophy candidate, Melvin Gordon, with 2,260 yards rushing. Gordon and Mariota have made this a two-man race for the Heisman. This kid can flat-out play. How do you like this game?
I'm looking forward. I mean, I'm looking forward to all the games, first of all. Go back to what Terry was talking about, the Pac-10. I love the fact that it's on Friday night. It gives them a true football fan. They're going to watch it. Not to the average football fan and just going to watch football on Saturdays, but you know what? It gives the Pac-10, it gives them a national arena to play in front of everybody, and everybody can see them. And I think that it's going to be a great game in the Pac-12 group. I really look forward to it. And this game is it's the last game of the day. Wisconsin, you know, they are truly a one-dimensional team, Their quarterback's Stavi's not really that great. He plays well enough in the old John Schaefer days here at Penn State. You play well enough to win, and don't turn the ball over, and you'll be all right. So, Ohio State's got to do one thing. They got to stop the run. I mean, we'll get into it later, but you can probably tell the way I'm going here. I just don't see them able to stop a Wisconsin run game. I really don't. I mean, I watched Michigan, who, you know, they ran the ball pretty well on them. I mean, they launched the ball up and down the field on Ohio State. And I've been nothing but impressed with Ohio State defense all year. That's a bad Michigan team that they let hang in there. And, you know, they had a couple turnovers late, a couple long runs to really put it out of hand. But Michigan was in that game the whole time. And Wisconsin, I mean, I just think that they are just jacked, man. I mean, they're 7 in a row, like you said. They're playing great. They're playing great team offense, great team defense. No name defense at that. No real stars in that defense. Just playing the game way it's supposed to be played. And, you know, the quarterback situation is really, 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 really going to hurt Ohio State. I know that T.J. Barrett, he really struggled their first couple of games. Obviously lost to the Virginia Tech. And then once he settled down and got comfortable in it, he became an unbelievable player, possibly an All-American quarterback type of the way he was playing by the end of the year. But I just don't see their third-string quarterback having that kind of presence in this game. I think that Wisconsin, is going to take these guys out, and I'm just, you know, it's just, I'm looking forward to a great game. I'm really looking forward to this game specifically.
Yeah, I am too. And, you know, thinking about the whole JT Barrett injury and all that, just think how good Ohio State might have been with Braxton Miller the whole season. It's a scary thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he could have been the best player in the country too, or certainly up there in the top three or four. The guy's making the trip to New York at the end of the year.
Yeah, I know, and then a lot of people had talked about how good Barrett was a better player for Urban Meyer in his offense, which is scary to me. But I think that he throws the ball a little bit better than Braxton Miller, and they were talking about Braxton Miller transfer, and I'm like, that's insane that they were actually talking about that happening. And if it does, it's amazing to me. But you might next year have that dual threat offense of having Braxton Miller and Barrett back there and in the backfield, one playing running back, one playing quarterback, or a slot receiver, what he could do. I mean, you look at Urban Meyer with Tim Tebow and Alex Smith and those guys, move them around and be an athletic quarterback. So you might have two of those guys in the field at one time.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Well, hey, Terry, let's talk SEC championship. Alabama and Missouri sneaking in there to win that as Georgia tanks, as they usually do at the end of the year. Does Missouri have a chance against the Crimson Tide? And what a mess the Final Four would be if Missouri were to win that game, like we were saying.
Well, on paper, you would have to say absolutely not. I mean, Alabama is obviously very impressive and the best roster in college football, and you know they're playing really well, and you know you gotta look to them to control this game. But with Missouri, it's just one of those things. I mean, would any of us expected, you know, when they made the move to the SEC that they would be in the conference championship 2 years in a row? I mean, it's insane that they've been able to have the success that they've had so early on in that conference. But in this game, it's going to be difficult. Matty Mock's a fine, you know, he's a fine quarterback. He's kind of a gritty little guy. I mean, you know, they're like 100th in passing in the country. They don't really light up the scoreboard there. You know, they're a pretty solid rush team. They're kind of a middle of the pack, if you will, from a statistical standpoint. They haven't really scored a whole lot of points, you know, pretty much in the lower third tier of, you know, scoring average, you know, as it pertains to the NCAA. But what they do is they're very good on special teams. They're very good on defense. They're very sound. And they're going to – I think they're going to play with a huge chip as they have since they've entered the SEC. They are 7-1 in SEC play this year, which is impressive. I mean, they do have two bad losses to Indiana and then obviously a really bad loss to Georgia, 34-0. But I think there could be a little bit of a hangover for Alabama after the Iron Bowl. There's always, you know, with the intensity in that game, with the rivalry that is Alabama and Auburn, it's kind of like, in Alabama's minds, I have a feeling like once they got past that game, it was kind of like, well, we're in the playoff. But Missouri's going to be a scrappy, feisty little team, and they're going to get after it. And we've seen Alabama kind of slow roll their way into games against Utah and maybe against Oklahoma last year where they weren't really mentally prepared to play. And teams that are not quite what they are from a personnel standpoint have beaten them and beaten them pretty good. So could Missouri beat Alabama? Sure. I mean, they could. Missouri's a good football team. They really are. Do I think that they'll beat Alabama on Saturday? I don't. But there's a possibility that if Alabama doesn't come to play and Saban doesn't have those guys mentally prepared, which is difficult. That's difficult to do, especially after a big win like they had over Auburn. But, I mean, you know, you look at Sims. Sims will probably play pretty well in neutral site games and at home. Lane Kiffin's done a really good job with the offense. Alabama still can turn the ball. They can turn around, hand the ball off to Henry and to Yeldon, and they can run the ball, obviously, with the best of them. And Amari Cooper right now is playing about as well as any player in the country, a wide receiver, and, I mean, amazingly well. I mean, he reminds me a lot of what Lane Kiffin did with Marquise Lee when he was at USC, but I think Amari Cooper's a better player. He's got that extra gear. I mean, that guy, he just runs away from double cut. I mean, he's insane how athletic he is. And they're really moving along there on offense. So I think with a little bit of an improved, more diverse offense, even if they slow play themselves a little bit in this game and it's a little bit nip and tuck there early on, I think in the second half you'll see Alabama take control of this football game. But Missouri, you know, if the ball bounces right, they get a few turnovers, maybe a special teams touchdown, maybe a defensive touchdown, this game might be interesting, but on paper, you know, you look at Alabama as probably the best team in the country right now, them and Oregon, and, you know, you have to look at they should win this game. I mean, they should win by a couple touchdowns if everything's equal and they play, you know, and they execute the way they're supposed to execute. But we'll see. Missouri is a really, really interesting story, and I'm sure they're going to be really fired up to go out there and play against the blue blood program of the SEC in Alabama. But should be a fun game to watch. Maybe not as fun as Wisconsin and Ohio State or Arizona and Oregon, but you know, it'll be interesting enough, I'm sure.
Well, I got to say, I mean, Alabama came back and won that game in the fourth quarter, but it was 36-34. They gave up a lot of points to that Auburn team as well. And, you know, as Auburn couldn't cover Amari Cooper, Alabama couldn't cover Sammy Coates either. 206 yards for Coates, 224 for Cooper. It looked like those two guys were two sprinters out there by themselves and quarterbacks throwing the ball as far as they could in that game. So, I'm with you. I think Alabama probably wins this game, but I'm still not sold that they're the best team in the country, boys. I'm just not going there yet.
I'm with you. They're my guys. Yeah. I mean, I'm a Tide guy. You know that, obviously. We've seen this happen year in and year out. The number one team goes in there, and I remember the Big Eight title game back in like 1996 or 7 with Texas and Nebraska. You guys remember that game? And James Brown had that 4th-and-1 play, just had that huge upset, totally threw a wrench into all the championship games and stuff like that. And, stranger things have happened, like Terry said, Missouri. You know, they lost. Get a defensive touchdown, a special teams touchdown, and then just play defense. I mean, that's the thing about – I mean, they can't go run and shoot with Alabama. They can't do it. They just don't have the horses. So they gotta play the dink and dunk game, keep that offense off the field, move the ball possession, and then have a scrappy defense with a couple plays and hope that Alabama has an off day at the quarterback position. He's not exactly lit the world on fire all season. So that's been their Achilles heel, and he just put the pressure on him. So, again, one of those days I'm looking forward to. Is it Saturday yet? I mean, you know, I did last week's show, guys. You know, I figured it out because last Tuesday was the first day without football in 42 nights. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. I don't know what night it was, but one of those nights there was not a. It was the first game in 40-some straight days that there was not a college or NFL game on. So, and that's why I missed the show last week. So, for the weekend, it's gonna be a great weekend. You know, starting out, you know, Thursday's not a great college slate. It's a pretty good NFL game on with the Cowboys. I believe they're playing the Bears, but the East Carolina's playing Thursday night. But then Friday night, the Pac-12 title. You got Saturday, you're sitting around all day, you know, having coffee and crumpets and having a good time with your family and friends, you know, no alcohol.
Right, absolutely.
Yep. You're not partaking. But this game's on from about, you know, the 4 o'clock is the big one, but if you have games starting at noon, go until about 11 o'clock that night. So
I'm not going to lie to you. I had three TVs and a computer this weekend. I was loaded up. I had games on every channel all day long.
I was down at my bar, and I had my four TVs on in my upstairs room at the bar I had your feet.
There you go. Well, hey, let's talk Florida State. They took it to the wire again. They stuck by Florida somehow, only because Florida wasn't good enough to take the game from them, I think. Jameis Winston certainly had the worst game of probably his entire life, not just his career at Florida State, but his entire life, and Florida just couldn't take advantage of the mistakes, and Florida State should have lost that game as well. But the question is, can the rambling wreck of Georgia Tech knock off the Noles this week?
Ask me, what is your call? I mean, we're not making our picks yet. I know that you're pretty interested in this game as well as we are, but it's got to burn them eventually. It has to. Florida State has been playing with fire. They have not even come close to covering in a game in the last 7, 8, 9 weeks. I mean, just they should have got beat by Louisville. They should have got beat by Boston College. They should have got beat by Miami. They should have got beat by Notre Dame. Notre Dame actually did beat them. They should have got beat by Florida last week. But they keep winning. It's crazy.
But, you know, I think in all those games, though, Keith, in all those games, they managed to win them. I think in this game this week with Florida, Florida just managed to lose.
Yeah,
they just weren't good. Florida State didn't really do anything to win this game except make less mistakes than or not be able to capitalize. Florida not being able to capitalize on all the Florida State mistakes. Florida just didn't know how to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. You know, that's going to be a good game. I mean, get the Randall Reck and Georgia Tech with that triple option going on out there. I mean, love watching it. If the option is run right, it's not a better offense in the Goon world to watch, in my opinion. If run correctly, I love watching it. Now, if it gets shut down, it's painful. They get down by, you know, the easiest way to beat an option team is you got to jump on them early. Florida State jumps Georgia Tech early, it's over. I mean, they can't come back. They won't be able to come back. So, you know, you got to make those guys force them into getting out of their comfort level, and that is, you know, running the triple option. And do I see that happening? I sure as heck do. That may lead into one of my picks later, but that's how I feel about it.
Well, hey, Terry, I wanted to ask you in regards to this game. The look on Jameis Winston's face the entire night, he looked like he was completely gone, completely clueless to the whole game.
Yeah, I think it's starting to wear on him a little bit. I just think with all the stuff that's gone on over the course of the year, and I think, you know, obviously the glow around Jameis Winston has been tarnished dramatically, obviously, and I just think I think the entire Florida State program is at this point. I think it's all going to come crashing down at some point. It's just been such a strange season, both on the field and off the field. As you guys mentioned, they've had so many games where they could have lost and they found ways to win. You know, just living on the edge as much as they lived on the edge. And I think for Jameis, I think it's just a culmination of all these things. And you're right; it doesn't look like he's having fun anymore. You know, and when he was having fun and you saw that big smile on his face, and you know, whether you like him or not off the field or whatever, you know, the kid's a really good football player, but it just looks like he's not having fun, and it just looks like the entire Florida State football program is just, you know, they're just hanging together by a thread at this point. And it's, you know, it's sad to see, you know, they're a talented football team, and they're just not executing, not playing very well. And they've just struggled in pretty much all, you know, all three facets of the game. But with Jameis, I just don't think he's having fun at this point, Bill.
Yeah. Well, he did have his hearing today, and they are not going to rule anything until at least after the weekend. So he will play this week. But I think the Jameis Winston era at Florida State is ending very soon, whether it ends January 2nd, January 15th, or next week, it's happening pretty soon. He's going to be out of here before you know it. But hey, the big chips are falling, fellas. We talked Will Muschamp a couple weeks ago, but what about Bo Pelini getting fired at Nebraska with 9-plus wins a year for all 7 years that he's been there? How in the world do you do a whole lot better than that? And I'm not sure going in a new direction is a good idea when you're pretty darn successful. We know he's had some off the field issues and ruffled a few feathers, but geez, you win 9-10 games every year. That's pretty good. And then, of course, we heard today Brady Hoke got learned his fate, which we knew was coming. That's three major powers with job openings, and I'm betting there's more. One I also think that's going to come up, and see what you guys think about this. I think that Frank Beamer is going to be in trouble at Virginia Tech. I think they're not going to fire him, but I wouldn't be surprised they don't force him out.
Yeah, well, I'll start here. And then the whole Beamer thing, that just reeks of Paterno, Bowden, Mack Brown out of Texas, where they just, you know, they just get stagnant in their ways, and the alumni get very impatient. It's a very, what have you done for me lately culture, and it's sick and disgusting that it's come to this. That is the way it has been, and you don't want to see a guy like Frank Beamer go out the way Joe did, or Bobby being forced out. And you know, Mack Brown unceremoniously was let go by Texas, but I do want to say something about that Texas game I watched Thanksgiving night. I mean, I was trying to explain to my wife what Baylor was doing to Texas, and I said that is the equivalent of Temple coming in here and just beating the living crap out of Penn State at Beaver Stadium in front of 105,000 people in the biggest game of the year, and they are completely defenseless against the Temple team. I said that's the exact equivalent, because those blue bloods down in Texas cannot be happy with getting beat up the way they did by, and just embarrassed by a lesser Baylor team than people that they have looked down upon for years upon years. And Baylor goes in there and just takes them and just lips them. They can't be happy down there, but go back to the Pope Pelini situation. And I was watching that Minnesota game 2 weeks ago when Minnesota upset them, and the guy announcing said, I don't know who it was, but I guess I can really find out if I really want to. But he says, I think that Bo Pelini is a 9-10 win season guy. He's not going to take Nebraska to that next level of winning national titles. Maybe he's capped out right now. He is his resources are capped as far as he's doing as good a job as he can do, but he's never going to get them into that undefeated national title race. And I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense, because they let Solis go for winning 10-11 games a year. It's a very impatient crowd out there. You hate to see him go, but you saw it coming. I mean, you know, Pelini was told last year, it's 10, 12 wins or you're out. So I don't think he's upset. I really don't. Brady Hoke, again, he lasted two, three more months longer than I thought. So, I think there'll be more openings? I told Bill, me and Bill talked about it, and I don't know. But I just don't feel that the alumni and the big dogs at Miami are happy with Al Golden and what he's done lately. And watching that game let loose the pit the way they did the other day when the guys weren't playing hard or playing for him, that's the easiest way to get the ticket out of your busting at home, in my opinion, as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. Terry, what's your thoughts on the Bo Pelini deal?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Nebraska, you know, they made the move to the Big Ten for really stability, obviously, because the Big Ten is one of the best conferences in college football, and it made a lot of sense from that standpoint. But one of the things that I think has really impacted Nebraska is kind of like threefold. So number one is when they made that move, it kind of changes the dynamic of how they recruit and where they recruit. And I think for a long time, Nebraska was able to go into maybe Texas and, you know, some of the Midwestern states there towards the West, though, and, you know, pluck some players. And, you know, it made a lot of sense because they were playing in and amongst those teams in the Big 8 and the Big 12. And then also one of the things that's really affected Nebraska, which has changed the dynamic of the job itself, is the resurgence of the Pac-12 in terms of it being a deeper conference in general, because they used to get a lot of kids from California. And, you know, USC would always get their kids, but UCLA, obviously, with them being what they are, that impacts, and I don't think a lot of people think about this as much, but Nebraska used to go into California and get a lot of really good football players. A lot of those guys that were, you know, USC, UCLA quality back in the, you know, the 80s and 90s, and I mean, they were a fixture there, just like Oklahoma still does now. And they haven't been able to do that because those kids are going to UCLA now. If they don't go to USC, they're going to UCLA. If they don't go to UCLA, they're going to Oregon, or they're going to Arizona, or they're going to Arizona State. So they're not getting some of those leftover kids that those prime programs in the Pac-12 were letting go, if you will. So with them kind of moving and shifting around conferences, and then also with the dynamic shifting, you know, a little bit further west of them, it's really changed the way that they go about recruiting, and I think that the pool of kids that they choose from is a little bit smaller than what it used to be. Then you couple that with the fact that Nebraska, for a number of other reasons, isn't quite the job that it once was. And, you know, Bo Pelini with his personality and all that, you know, I just think that it's kind of all, you know, the reality, I think, is setting in. And I think Nebraska and maybe some of their fans and maybe their administration, they feel a certain way about what they think that program can be and what kind of job it is. But I think the reality is that it's probably not what they think it is. Bo Pelini's a good football coach. He's a great football coach. And, yeah, he's going to win you 9-10 games. Is he the guy that can get you to the next level? Well, I mean, that's really a product of personnel as well. I mean, you know, you could be the best coach in college football, but if you're coaching, you know, Liberty and you're playing in the SEC, you're probably not going to win a whole lot of football games. So I think Nebraska's biggest problem has been that they just they're not able to recruit the way they did when they had their heyday, and they were, you know, they also had a schematic advantage with the offense that they ran and all that, but they were getting some really quality football players, you know, a lot of quality skill position players that they had. They're not quite getting those same kind of kids. So I just think the dynamic is a long way to kind of just say the dynamic there in Nebraska has really changed, and I think that them thinking they're going to go in a different direction and it's really going to change what's going on in Nebraska, I'm telling you, I don't think much is going to change, regardless of who they bring in there. You know, short of bringing in Nick Saban or someone like that, I mean, I just don't think that, you know, a coach, regardless of who it is, going to be able to change the dynamic of the way things are going recruiting-wise. So on that front, you know, I don't know how you get rid of a guy that wins 9-10 games. It's just, to me, it's kind of crazy. Other than you think the program's something, then it really isn't at this point. But Brady Hoke, we all knew Brady Hoke was gone. It was just a matter of time. Kind of felt bad for the guy. He was kind of dangling out there. The program's a, you know, complete disaster right now. Recruits just decommitting all over the place. It's, you know, whoever the next coach is, apparently they've offered the job to a few people and they've been turned down already. So I don't know who the next coach is going to be, but that's a great football program. It's a shame that it's going through what it's going through now. But we knew Brady Hoke was.
I'm so upset. I'm devastated by that.
Yeah, I know. I know you are, buddy. But anyway, I won't ramble on too much about that. Miami, you guys mentioned it. Al Golden has had some difficulties. I'm kind of in the camp with Bill. I think he'll stick on for another year at least, and then they'll probably force him to make some changes there on his staff. But you know, it's not a good situation down there. That's another job which Bill knows. We've talked about this a number of times. You know, that job isn't exactly what it was, you know, when they were kind of in their heyday. And look, college football has changed. I mean, it's changed so much in the last 5 or 6 years. Everybody's on TV now. Everybody has a chance to, you know, to play in front of, you know, people day in, week in and week out. So, I mean, you know, like Notre Dame used to have an advantage over everyone because they were the only team that was on TV every single week. College football is so different now. So it really comes down to resources. It comes down to your ability to have, you know, a certain regionality when it comes to recruiting and a certain touch and, you know, footprint. And for Miami and some of these schools, it's just it's a different dynamic out there. It's a different landscape. Al Golden's doing everything he can possibly do, you know, short of maybe making some decisions there with his coaching staff. So we'll see how it plays out. I know we want to get to some picks, so I'll shut up.
Hold on, before we get to picks real quick. I'm hearing Jim Tressel, the pastor. Matt Fink has put it on Twitter the other day. He says, I've been saying it for 6 months, and he goes, I think Jim Tressel would be a perfect fit for Nebraska.
Yeah,
That's
a real good fit, actually.
Yeah.
That's a good
and he
fit.
He has
be a
one
really
more
good
year
fit.
Of show cause. He has the show, that show cause thing. So, you know, I just a name to throw out there. So let's get picking, boys.
Of course, you know, I heard right out of the shoot Scott Frost, the OC at Oregon, back to Nebraska where he played quarterback. So it'll be wide open. Coach. Well, hey, let's get to it before we run out of time. Last week, Terry, you were the Georgia Bulldogs away from an undefeated week. You went 8-1. My heart killed me because I went with the Temple Owls, just hoping they would win, and that was my loss. And then them War Dam Eagles let me down after taking a big lead. So I was 7-2. Keith, you were 6-3 because you were playing upsets, trying to gain some ground, and you lost with Minnesota and a couple of those other teams. But good week by everybody. Terry is the leader, 60-28. I'm 58-30. Keith, you're 51-37. We got room, though, brother. Here we go. Who's up first this week?
I think I'm up first.
Okay.
Because I think Keith went first last week, even though Keith wasn't with us, he went first last week.
That sounds right, then.
Okay, Temple at Tulane. Owls have to win. Terry.
Oof. Wow. I'll go Temple.
I'm going Temple too. Tulane is out of it, right? They've only got 3 or 4 wins.
Yeah, they've struggled. I'll go Temple.
I'm going to go Temple also.
Me too. Okay. Liberty advances to round 2 to go to Villanova to play the Wildcats. Terry?
Yeah, they beat James Madison in a pretty competitive game. I was following that this weekend, but I like Villanova. Villanova is one of the better teams in that conference, as we've talked about, in that subdivision. So I like Villanova to win this game.
I am going to go Villanova at home as well. Keith?
Villanova for sure.
All right. Okay, here we go, big boys. Friday night, number 11, Arizona. Number 2, Oregon.
Well, my coach has always told me it's tough to beat a team 3 times in a row here, so I'm gonna take I'll take Oregon. I like Oregon to win this game. I think they're going to be impressive as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the fact that as much as I really liked Arizona the other night, I liked Oregon a lot too, and I think they might be the best team in the country right now. I'm going Ducks.
Could be.
Good pretty game up here, boys. I'll take my Arizona Wildcats.
yeah. There you go. All right, you just pick him for Ridge Rod. You're a Ridge Rod guy.
Yeah, how about that? What is Ridge Rod? He's got a Pac-12 coach of the year today, and Brady Hoke gets fired. He's just going to sit back and say, you know what? How you doing? That's all he's doing.
That's
crazy
awesome.
World. Number 1, Alabama versus number 17, Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri definitely could make some noise here if things fall their way, as we kind of mentioned earlier. But I like Alabama. I think they'll find a way, even if it's a little dicey early on. I'll take Alabama.
I'm going to take Alabama, too, even though I hope so much that they lose.
So I guess I got to take Missouri. Come on, I can't root against my Tide. Roll, damn Tide. Roll!
All right, how about Kansas State at Baylor? This is still a regular season game, so this is at Baylor. Bryce Petty is playing, as far as we know.
I'll take Baylor. Baylor's going to win this game. They're going to win it. And I, if he plays and he's healthy and he's ready to go, I think they're going to do everything they can to be impressive in this game. So I'll take Baylor.
Yeah, I actually wrote down Kansas State when I was sitting down right before we came on to do these. And then I Googled up Bryce Petty and it said that it looks like he is going to play. So I'm going with Baylor at home if Bryce Petty plays. So that's how I got to go.
About a dozen years ago, Bill Schneider at Kansas State upset Oklahoma in a Big 12 title game. So we're saying it's not a Big 12 title, but I'm going to pick Kansas State. Pick another game up, baby. Woo!
You know what? I don't have a real problem with that pick. I wouldn't have a problem to take Kansas State.
Kansas State.
All right, number 3, Florida State. Number 16, Georgia Tech.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good game. Georgia Tech, you know, they most certainly could beat Florida State, and there's a good chance that it'll happen. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go Florida State. I'm going to take Jameis Winston and the Florida State Seminoles to just find a way to win a game, another game. I'm sure it's going to be dicey, but I think they'll definitely come together, they'll pull together, and they'll figure out a way to win the 29th game in a row.
Well, I'm going to pick up my game here because I'm going with Georgia Tech. The Jameis Winston era is over.
The next game.
Yeah, he's got to play this game, though. So
you know what,
after
he plays this game and he loses, they won't care if he's there for the next one or not.
All right. I want to take Georgia Tech, but I got to pick a game up on Bill here. So I'm going to go with Georgia Tech. I can't pick Florida State. Come on.
Attaboy.
Room for Georgia Tech.
All right. We're down to 90 seconds, so we got to hustle on through. We have number 14, Wisconsin, at number 6, Ohio State.
Good game. Yeah, I would love to talk about this game for 10 minutes, but I'll just go ahead and I'll be quiet and just say Wisconsin. I'm going to take Wisconsin to upset. Well, it's not an upset because they're favorite, but I'll take Wisconsin to beat Ohio State in this game.
And I thought I was going to pick up a game there because I'm
defense,
going
baby.
Badgers.
Badgers, defense, and Melvin Gordon.
Wow. All right, I guess I got to go. I want to pick Wisconsin, but I'm going to go Ohio State to pick another game up.
You just like that Ohio State shirt you wear.
Yeah. My brother lives in the basement. He's an Ohio State fan, so I got to give him a little love.
There you go. All right. Well, we've got them all in. We'll see how we fare here come Friday and Saturday. So that brings us to the top of the hour. We'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the Goon, Keith Conlon, for their great insights. We'd like to remind our listeners we'll be back next Tuesday night.
December 9th at 7 p.m. to talk championship games and bowl lineups. Be ready, boys. We got to pick all the bowl games next week.
Oof.
You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.boxoffradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.